This is the Passive Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where our goal is to educate you about the ways to create passive wealth through real estate methods that do not require your time. I'm your host, Justin Moy with President's Club Investors. Let's get right into the show.
Hey, investors. Thanks for coming on to another episode, Passive Real Estate Strategies. Today, we are breaking the mold of what we've been doing so far for the year. So if you follow the show, you'll know that we stopped doing a lot of guest episodes, and that's really for a few reasons. And in our initial episode this year, you can go back and check those out. But today, I am bringing on an exceptional guest to talk specifically about them and the deal that we're actually bringing through as the second deal of the year. And really what I find to be the best deal that I've seen based on the fundamentals of real estate investing. So today I'm sitting down with Dan French. Now, he's the managing director of ATX and ResProp. And again, if those names sound familiar, it's because they're our most recent partners on a relationship we've been harvesting for, you know, maybe a year and a half now at this point, just seeing what we can make happen. And we're going to dive into the details of that deal on this episode, but it required over 100 assets, 86 exits, an average IRR over 20%, I think 22 or something like that, 27 in Jacksonville. And something that's really impressive I want to call out, Dan, is really your track record. It's a lot, but some people may not see it as much because other groups are advertising, hey, we average 40 IRR, 70 IRR. But one thing that's really important is the timing and the volume of transactions that you guys have averaged that 20% plus margin at. That's one of the most impressive track records over that type of longevity. So I'd love to know, you know, what you attribute that track record to and really your success investing through many cycles at this point.
Yeah, well, that's quite the intro, and I do appreciate it, Justin. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure, man, and really respect what you're doing. And it's an honor that we're partnering with you on this deal. It's a wonderful opportunity, and I hope to build a real great friendship with you and your network, and hopefully do a lot more deals together. But yeah, I appreciate the shout out on the track record. And look, I think it is one thing to call out is you know, people have a saying like, all right, you want someone who's tested through a lot of different cycles and or parts of the cycle, you know, and I happen to be, you know, my experience in real estate goes back to 20 years ago. And now granted that was on a small partnership, but I've seen the whole GFC, the run up to it and the enthusiasm and the exuberance of just getting deals and then over leveraging them and doing things that are completely, you know, I would never, ever do again. And a lot of that was on my personal account with my personal money. So
yeah,
I was more comfortable doing that and taking more risk in my 20s. But then seeing all that, you know, the fallout from it and really how real estate is a financial asset, mm-hmm. you know, really thinking about real estate as a long-term asset. And it's very much driven by, you know, debt markets, cap rates, and what's really happening around you. There's a lot of things under your control, and there are some things that are not in your control. So I think being more of a seasoned investment group and having like a lot of experience, seeing different parts of the cycle play out, yeah. I think it's super important and something that LPs should be looking for in their sponsor. And maybe I'll pause there for a minute.
Yeah, no, I really like what you called out because one thing that's great about commercial real estate is there is a lot of stuff in your control, how it's priced, the vendors you use, there's a lot of levers you can pull to increase income and save expenses. So I think that's a really big driving factor. But one thing I think that people don't realize is there's certain factors that are less in your control. The debt markets is a really big one, and people are learning that lesson a lot right now. So what are some of the ways that, or what are some of the things that you see are uncontrollables and some of the ways that you guys mitigate the risk of those uncontrollables, whether it's debt markets, whether it's something else, things happening on the property, insurance rates, you know, doubling in some areas, you know, how do you kind of take those things in and mitigate as best as you can when you go through to new acquisitions?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, there's known uncontrollables, you know, things you know that you can't control. That'd be the Fed. You know, I can't control the Fed. You know, we can prognosticate and try to think about, you know, well, what would the Fed do next year or even in 3 or 4 or 5 years? And then there's unknown uncontrollables. And that would be like black swan events. And those are really scary. That would be like, you know, COVID, right? Yeah. You know, maybe that was more of a gray swan that they say, like some people could have seen that coming and they did predict a pandemic, but it wasn't really rooted in investment thinking overall that would happen.
Right.
So you know, we have to be very downside protected. All that really just bakes into downside protection. And we like to take sort of like a Warren Buffett approach and apply it to real estate. So a lot of it's on the buy side. You know, that is the thing that's most in your control. You know, how are you buying the asset at a great basis? And then what kind of debt are you placing on it? Do you have fixed or floating? And right now, you know, I think as an investment shop, we want to really sleep well at night and have our investors sleep well at night. And if you're an LP and you're looking for a passive investment, that is one great way to do it, right? Yeah, you don't have to think about a 3 + 1 + 1 mm-hmm. with our. You just have to think about, well, are they executing? Is a good basis that they're coming in? Are they executing on their business plan? Right. I'm going to get my updates, and they're going to communicate very well to me. But besides that, I know I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
So
that's really and you said it a couple of times, is the basis that you buy at. And when I tell investors, you know, hey, this is one of the best deals that I've seen, if not the best deal that I've seen come across our desk, a lot of the times they'll say, well, you know, why? Are other deals that you've done not as good or worse? And you know, no, but from a basis perspective, like a lot of the deals that we've done in the past, there's some type of unique factors to them that make us really, really enjoy those partnerships. But purely from a basis perspective, we're talking price per unit, going in cap rate on an as-is basis, not a pro forma basis, and as-is going at cap rate over 6% in a primary market, and debt service coverage ratios, and even in the market, the rent to income ratio, those are really big things that we look at all the time. And quite honestly, where most deals fail our initial due diligence is really in those sectors. And the deal that you guys just brought out, the Portofino Club, really just passed all of them with flying colors. So how did we come across a deal that was really, in my opinion, this good of a basis point?
Yeah, well, thank you. Again, I think you're really savvy in terms of your investment thinking. And I've heard you on a couple of podcasts about what you look for. And I think it's totally spot on and really like apply some of that downside protection thinking, which is great for the people that you're stewarding, your help to stewarding their assets as well. But, you know, how do we come across this? I think number one is that we were patient, right? Mm-hmm. So part of the track record going back was we paused on the buy side in 2019. So between 2011 and 2019 is when we purchased those 100 assets.
Yeah.
Many of them that we've now exited, right? Because we felt that in 2019 and beyond, it was just like very frothy. It was the cap rates had compressed tremendously within the space we're in, which was primarily value-add multifamily, right?
Yeah.
And every day that you're not selling, you're buying again. You know, I do like that mental model. So we just said to ourselves, you know what? It might be time to just harvest this equity, return capital and great returns for our investment partners, and then just sit on our hands and wait for another good, you know, buying opportunity that was more downside protected, that wasn't as frothy. So that's when we came back into the market around 2023, you know, mid 2023.
Yeah.
And then it's about, you know, we'll ramp up the pipeline again and get active and look at every single deal in Florida, look at really every single deal in Austin and DFW. Mm-hmm. Those are the markets that we target primarily in Texas. And then it's about patience. You know, we were in the mix on Portofino Club, just kind of reviewing it. Mm-hmm. And it was out before in 2023 for $185,000 a door, mm-hmm. right? With a different brokerage shop. It was under contract. It fell out of contract. Mm-hmm. And it went dark for a couple months and it came back out with a different brokerage team. That team reached out to us, tried to get us up to 155, and we stayed put at 148. And that's where we are. So we were able to lock in the deal at a 20% discount to where it was just, you know, 7 or 8 months prior. So that's basically how, I don't know if that really truly answers all your questions, but
yeah.
It's patience. It's having great broker relationships. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, sticking to fundamentals on your underwriting analysis so you don't overpay. But yeah. These are some of the things that we do.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the big, big, big values that people who look to the syndication model look to leverage is your time in market and your relationships. This price point of a deal and this deal, I don't know how many other people's desk it went across, but it didn't come across ours because we haven't been in that market for as long as you guys. And I'm sure it didn't go across 90% of the people who would love to buy in the Jacksonville market. If it wasn't just to you guys, it was maybe the top 4 or 5 people who had just been active in the space, who had put in the sweat equity and the real equity into the market with proven track records to close. And really, we're finding a lot now. The discounts are coming from certainty. And I don't know if you found that, but buyers are willing to take a cut on price for certainty of close. And when LP investors are able to leverage the certainty that you've built with brokers and with sellers in the market, it can see big discounts. I mean, they might take the chance on a newer group, but they'd have to pay more, right? Just to make it worth the risk of the uncertainty. So that's a huge leverage point that a lot of people actually look for the syndication model to solve. I don't want to build those relationships over 20 years like you have. You already have. We'll plug right in and invest in those deals. So the basis is super strong. One thing that I really like about this deal are some of the points that we talked about before was the leverage on it. So can you tell us about the debt, why you guys picked it? Because it has a couple more layers maybe than just a straight, hey, I took out a loan for 80% of the purchase price, stuff like that. Walk us through the debt and why you guys felt like this debt was a good fit for this business model, this business plan.
Yeah, so we're assuming a really attractive Freddie. It's an existing loan with Freddie. So it's got 7-year term left, and I think by the time we close it, about 7 months of interest only period that's still left on the debt, and it's at 4.99%, which is far below what you can achieve in today's market, which might be 6.2 or even above that on a fixed debt execution. So that alone was great, and now we're putting a supplemental on it, so mm-hmm. that supplemental rate's a little higher, but a blended rate together, so the supplemental and the existing loan are coterminous, so the same term, same 7-year term with 7 months of IO, that is 5.64%, which is below your going in cap rate, which is kind of what everyone's looking for right now to have what people call positive leverage. So you're going at 6.25 or thereabouts, and your loan execution's at 5.6. That feels pretty good.
Yeah, that does. And I mean, fixed rate, which people like. And a lot of times what I've told people is, hey, like, it's not always bad to put floating rate debt on a property just because it's kind of gotten burned the last year. In the grand scheme of investing, floating rate investors have actually won more often than not. So it's interesting when some people say, well, hey, how come you've done some deals floating, some deals fixed? And when they say me, they mean us, it's because the business plan is different and the opportunities are different. If you can assume a fixed 4% and blend it at 5% below 6, yes, you do that all day. There's certain times where I don't want to fix at the top of the debt markets, or I don't want to fix if I need to now raise additional equity. It may not make deals make sense. But I think that was a big point, is able to get the best of both worlds, which is fixed rate, but also extremely low rate relative to what you get now. And if you're looking at a value add floating rate, I mean, you could get quotes up to 8-9% plus, depending on the deal. So, I mean, damn near half what you're seeing out there on new product. How much leverage is on the loan with the existing loan and the supplemental? And why did you go with the supplemental? Tell us about the decision-making with that.
Yeah, I think it's about 61% loan to cost. So that feels pretty good. The debate around fixed and floating, look, there's other groups that are kind of, they're engineering a fixed debt by buying a rate cap, and that might be a 3+1+1, and that could work for them, right? Especially if you have a period, a hold mentality, your period is much more IRR driven. Then you might be saying to yourself, well, I have plenty of time to exit the deal in 3 years, or if I really need to, I'll take my extensions. That might cost me some money, but I'll take them. And that's okay. Everyone is entitled to have their own opinion of how to do things. In my world, I like to have, when people are investing with us, they should really sleep well.
Yeah.
And I think the fixed minds, having fixed debt right now in this market just allows people to just, set it and forget it. I'm going to read my reports, but I'm going to think 7 whole years, a lot of things can happen in that 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to wake up one day in year four and be really worried that the capital markets have completely changed.
Yeah.
But my optionality on the deal and what to do with it, how to exit it or how to, refinance it, mm-hmm. I might be out of options at the very wrong time. And that's a problem that would keep me up at night doing floating debt right now. So anyway, that's some of the mentality, but going with the supplemental to us made sense because even with that blended rate. So, the supplemental is 7.99%, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a smaller chunk. So if you have the blended cost of capital there on your debt, it's 5.6. And to us, it made sense because it's coterminous with the existing place loan. And you get that 7 months of IO. That way your cash on cash during that period is really high. And it gives you a little bit of time to build momentum on your business plan. So we're going to start doing our unit turns right away. boosting up NOI and yeah. just really driving value at the asset level. So it just gives a nice ramp up period.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is options. And that's why, you know, I tell people, hey, your debt is going to be the number one killer of your deal, because the debt could be what exhausts your options, whether it's timing or whether it's, hey, you have the leverage you can or cannot do things. When you have 60%, and for anybody listening, most investors would consider, you know, 70% to be a pretty conservative amount of debt. Anything below that is like really good. Anything above that, you know, you're kind of getting a little shaky. Definitely like 80 or above is like, you know, really, really, you know, you're really letting the dice fly. But 60% is some of the lowest that we've seen, with still value add return upside. You know, we're still projecting over a 20 IRR. So getting the best of both worlds there. Now, you talked about options. When you have 60% leverage, your options really open up, because you do have room to refinance and not have to come to the table with seven figures. You can sell. And even if the markets are not completely aligned or it's not the perfect timing, when you have that low of debt and as high of a cash flow as the property is having, banks love to refinance with you. They love to look at that cash flow. They love to look at the amount of debt that you had, and you have a lot of equity to tap into really from day one. I mean, you're walking into equity on this thing is massive, not just from the discount, but also just the debt that's on it. So I think those are really big things to point out too is, you know, there's a reason why we want low debt, and that's because it gives you a lot of options and it gives you this massive, massive cushion for safety. And again, before we have to dig into the LP's returns or before we have to dig into, you know, cash calls or other conversations like that. And so I think those are really good. Speaking of cash calls, there's a metric that I love to look at to prevent cash calls in the future, and that's our debt service ratio, our DSCRs. DSCR in this deal, you know, walking in, I think it was close to 1.16 or 1.7, something like that. It goes up into over 2. Tell us how massive that is in your opinion, and kind of what other people might see as an average DSCR, and why this is in putting us in a much better position to feel good about preventing cash calls or preventing need for additional capital in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, when you're doing a Freddie or Fannie, you know, these are government sponsored entities, like GSEs, they call them. And, you know, they're conservative, right? They're government sponsored. And so they have a lot of oversight. So they're going to really require you to meet your DSCR. They're not going to allow you to put a supplemental to a level that's going to put you in trouble at the deal asset level. So really, they're looking for an absolute minimum of 1.25.
Yeah.
And of course, you want a cushion or a margin of safety. So, you know, I think anyone that sees like 1.5 will be like, all right, now we're getting a more comfortable territory. And this deal, I think you're right. Even day one, it's like 1.7 or thereabouts, and just goes up from there, because you're executing on your business plan. You're driving NOI. You're doing your rehabs. You know unit interiors. So you're going to drive rents. Yeah. But even absent all that, it's still, the deal still performs. So
yeah.
And which is another good aspect to it.
Yeah, like you said, it's options. It really right. it's another fancy way of saying, do you have the cash needed to pay the bank, pay your bills, and still have some left over for savings? Again, banks above a 1.25, they're pretty happy. So when you're talking 1.7 plus, again, very, very rare to see, especially in the value add space where the plan is, hey, we're not going to have cash flow for 1 or 2 years, and then we're going to really hit this big renovation. It's really hitting the cash flow from day one, too. We're projecting, you know, 6%, which is, again, massive. Like, just not seeing those year one for value-add opportunities, even buy and hold opportunities, they tend to have to grow a little bit. And another big thing about the market, so I think a lot of people have heard Jacksonville. It's a nice primary market. And I've been telling people, hey, you're seeing numbers in terms of DSCR, leverage, cash-on-cash returns that you likely won't even see in like tertiary rural markets, let alone a primary market like Jacksonville, which we really like. My favorite metric is the 20% rent to income ratio for this property. I mean, this is a beautiful asset. Lakes, fountains, right? It's not on a golf course, but it's really right there on the golf course. The unit layouts really serve a higher end tenant. Tell us why rent to income ratios might be so expensive for you, or I'm sorry, so important to you guys. And what do you typically look for in a good rent to income ratio for a property?
Yeah, you know, I heard you talk about this on a podcast recently. It's super important because there's been such a crazy, you know, rent growth, especially during COVID, right? So a lot of markets are they tapped out? That's something that should keep us up at night. Yeah. You know, you can't just pencil in a $300 rent increase or even a $150 or whatever your business plan is without really kind of pressure testing it and seeing, well, how can people actually afford it? The people that are going to live in this area or already do, can they afford it? So this is where you know, household income divided by the current rents is a good metric. So 20%, just for the audience benefit, is low, right? Like in Miami, it's like probably 45%, usually 45-50%. People, most of their wallet share, it's kind of sad in a way, man. It's people are drowning in the cost of housing. And so this feels really good. So it's just to put into perspective, yes, it's right by a golf course and country club, and it's right by a municipal park that's 145 acres. And it's right also near a Publix anchored, which is Publix, like the big shopping center in Florida. You know, it's a very well known. They put all their locations in the prime spots.
Yeah.
So that's an anchored retail shopping center right next to the property. And so there's not a lot of competition right nearby, but there's a high household income because it's a very, within Jacksonville, it's an affluent area.
Yeah.
Right. Just look at the country club. The fact that there's a country club right there. So, you know, there is definitely room to push rents, and it's a very family oriented type of community where if you look at the rent roll, a surprising number of people have lived there for a long time, which indicates that there's stickiness, number one, and number two, the property is well maintained and people are being cared for, which is wonderful. Residents are extremely important.
Yeah.
And it's part of our mission to serve them as well, you know, to improve their lives and improve our investors' lives. And that's the mission of what we do.
Yeah.
But then there is room. Like, the people are going to pay more to be proud of their home.
Yeah.
To have a much more upgraded kitchen, a nicer bathroom, to bring the property up to a different spec. So this is a wonderful thing of a very liquid capital, you know, market, is that the right money is going to go to the right spot. Mm-hmm. And it's going to keep these communities that were from the 80s. They're going to keep them part of the housing stock in our nation, which is, again, very important. People need a good place to live that's more affordable than just going to an A-plus core property.
Yeah.
Anyway, now I'm on a bunch of different tangents. Sorry, man. I'm very passionate about this, and I love real estate. I love investing. I love serving people.
Yeah, and I think it's important because people have, in a way, lost sight of that rent to income ratio. You see markets like these big Phoenix markets, or even, like you said, some nice areas of Florida, where like your business plan cannot be to bleed your tenants dry anymore. Like, there's just no more room there. And even by the standards of your leasing office, if you're expecting your tenants to make 3 times the income per month, you got to look at the numbers and say, like, is that even reasonable? Or do we now have to cater to the top 5-10% of the people who live in this area, and just really shrinks down your potential tenant pool? Or even worse, do I have to lower my standards for leasing? And that kind of puts you in a downward spiral as well. So I think the numbers have to make sense. If you're going to say, hey, we're going to come in here and boost rents $200-$300, you got to show me a strong rent to income ratio that lets me know we can sustain that, the market can sustain that, and the market wants it. This property has been about 95-97% occupied in a market that's very competitive. So the tenants are happy there. It's what it shows. And it's not having an issue lease things up. So we know that there's a lot of room there as well. When it comes to this deal, you know, is there anything else that really excites you about it? Maybe, you know, is or is not on the marketing packages, or, you know, anything that you've kind of learned about it since putting it under contract initially that just gets you more pumped up to bring this out to the investors?
Yeah, you know, I actually had the wonderful experience of pitching this deal at the Best Ever Conference, which was a lot of fun. We didn't actually win the competition, but it's all good. I was telling Randy Smith this the other day too. It's like, this is the kind of deal I wish I could fly every person to Jacksonville and show them this submarket. You know, because real estate investing is so localized, right? Mm-hmm. In order to be successful and you know, really know what you're doing, you have to pick your spot. And this, within Jacksonville, so a lot of people are reading about supply, and that should keep us up at night. If we're good investors, right? Like, you should know where new supply is. But if you look at Jacksonville as an MSA, there is a lot of new supply, and that is concerning. But in this area, right, this submarket, it's 15 minutes from the beaches, which a lot of people want to be near, you know, near that for access to go have fun with their families or go surfing, whatever they want to do. But there's no new supply in this immediate area. It's all been absorbed. It's all been delivered already. And then the newest, the only one new supply that's even coming up in the next 8 quarters is like a 300 unit property, but it's 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
It's kind of by itself, which is rare within a submarket to have not a lot of multifamily right next to you. because typically when people built multifamily, they built it together.
Yeah.
So it's rare to be so much on your own next to so many attractive things like the golf course and the country club and the park. And, you know. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how much that comes forward in the marketing package because we need to, you know, spend time on the deal, the financials of the deal. But that's like an intangible part of the deal. I think it's super important.
Yeah. And it's something that we've even talked about on the last deal we did. So last deal we did was in Dallas, and we've been very, very, very cautious about these primary markets because you're starting to see it now. You guys are out in Austin. I mean, that's the number one place for new supply right now. And even rent decreases up, like I saw 7% or something like that a couple of months back. And you just need to be careful because it doesn't mean these markets are bad. But you got to see, hey, how fast are they growing versus how fast is your supply coming on? And where, like you said, where is it? So the deal we did in Dallas, very infill market, like there's not new construction coming around that property. And I saw the same with this, very infill, not a lot of new competition. You're not going to have the 400 unit class A right next to you. That's going to, you know, they're going to have their leasing specials and their pre-fill specials that you're going to have to compete with. A lot of infill stuff. And I think that's the biggest thing that even me as an investor, when I heard Jacksonville, I kind of brushed it off a little bit. I said, yeah, I don't think we really want to play that game. But the more I dove into the deal, you know, the more I realized, okay, this is in a really, really good spot. And then just, you know, every line I read in the marketing package just made me more head over heels on the deal. So said, okay, we got to bring this thing out. So, man, Dan, this has been awesome. Awesome having you on the show. Anything else that you want to leave with the listeners? I know we are going to be talking a lot of calls lined up over these next few weeks to talk about the deal. But anything else that you feel like, hey, needs to be mentioned before we sign off here?
No, you know, I would just say, again, we love to build relationships. We're very mission driven. We want to actually build friendships as well and build, help build community. That's why I love what you and Randy and Elijah are doing. And folks like you are, you're pulling together people and they're learning from each other. They're collaborating with each other. They're finding great investment opportunities. The world's bigger than just putting your money in the stock market. So we want to be a resource to people. You know, we want to host you if you're ever in Austin, Texas. We want to meet up with you if we're in your town, your neighborhood. You know, we'll buy you dinner and just kind of like take a long term approach. We're very long term oriented thinkers, and so I'm super reachable. You know, I'll give out my number and my cell phone number. Actually, I could do it right now, but you know, and people, it's funny, people on certain podcasts will text me afterward and say, you know, hey, I'm thinking about. You know, someone texted me and asked me if we had a job for their daughter. And actually, we're going to put them to work at our property management business. So this is wonderful things, you know, that pop out and such great people in these networks. So, but my number is 845-629-1808. And seriously, just text me, hit me up.
Yeah. So
that's it.
Dan is such a great guy. And listeners, if you are listening to this show and you're on the fence about, you know, Dan, his team, us, what we do, this deal, other deals, whatever it is, I'm going to put a form in the show notes as well. Just fill that out and we'll get in touch, either me, myself, me and Dan, or whatever's best for you. You know, if this deal specifically interests you, I'll get in touch about that. If you have other questions, like you said, job opportunities, you know, whatever it could be, both Dan and I are very, very reachable, very open to the people who come into our ecosystem. So I'm going to put that form in the show notes, fill that out. And either me and myself or me and Dan will reach out and we can get in touch. So Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. This was great.
I appreciate you. Thank you.